Welcome to the podcast. Today's episode, I chose another lighthearted episode. I felt like listeners responded nicely to that one and in general enjoy some of my more positive episodes. So I thought I could use another opportunity to talk about Caribbean history specifically. Carnival, the subject of today's episode, is a global celebration that occurs in many countries around the world. Many of these countries are not in the Caribbean. However, Caribbean Carnival has a distinct cultural flavor and a unique positioning within the global tourism markets now that make the Caribbean Carnival celebrations culturally distinct from other similar festivities such as the New Orleans Mardi Gras celebration or a similar carnival celebration in Brazil. That distinct flavor was also developed from the inception of carnival in the Caribbean, and that will be part of the subject of today's episode. So here is what we are going to cover in this episode, because this one is weirdly well organized, guys. First, we will answer three important questions. One, how did carnival come to the Caribbean? Two, when did carnival change to become the culturally distinct celebration we'd recognize today? And three, how does carnival continue to evolve? I will also review some important traditions associated with carnival, such as mass camps, dancing, music, costume, juve, parade day, and those types of subjects. Once we get an idea for the more universal aspects of carnival, I will also share with you different unique carnival celebrations on different islands as the festival evolved and adapted to regional differences across the Caribbean, but I'll be very brief on that section. Then I'll discuss the diaspora and how we went from celebrations on our islands to transporting West Indian carnivals to international locations like Notting Hill, London, UK, Miami Carnival in Florida, USA, or Caribana in Toronto, Canada. Keep listening if this sounds interesting to you. My name is Arish, and this is the Global Black History Podcast. Welcome to the show. For a massive change, I kept today's introduction tight and right on topic. A rare move. But now that you're here, before I get into the meat of the episode, I want to direct you to some of my other episodes on Caribbean history. I've written two episodes so far, one on the history of Rastafarianism pre-Bob Marley, putting the spiritual movement on a global stage, and the second recommendation I have is a brief history of the Afro-Cuban religion of Yoruba origins, Santeria. Those are my main similar episodes to this one, so cue these up or add them to your listen list or what have you, because I think you may enjoy these episodes once this is done. Now let's get back to the main point, which is, let's trace the origins of carnival together here. Let's discuss. We're going to answer the questions as I promised, and the first question is, how did carnival come to the Caribbean? In 1738, carnival as we know it in the Caribbean began amongst the French colonizers, and this involved a series of festivities from Christmas to Ash Wednesday, which marked the beginning of Lent. As the French traded colonies with the British, most colonies that had been touched by the cruel hand of French colonization kept the carnival celebrations and expanded on them until they became the culturally distinct celebration we recognize today as uniquely Caribbean in its origin. The French carnival celebrations originally excluded the Africans they had enslaved at the time. Throughout the carnival season, the whites-only festivities included balls, hunting trips, parties, and a lot of revelry and bacchanalia spread out over the time period. The word carnival means farewell to flesh, and within the Christian context where it originated, this was because the celebration preceded giving up matters of the flesh, as well as part of the religious and physical sacrifices expected during the 40 days of the Lenten season. In order to give up all those matters of the flesh, sex, food, and indulgence in alcohol, it was only natural to precede that abstinence with bacchanalia in its purest form. At least this was the idea the slave masters, poor whites, and free mulattoes had. The class of white people and mixed with white people that formed the slave-owning nouveau riche upper class in the Caribbean have had a long tradition of overindulgence, decadence, and wasting their ill-gotten gains on partying. This was no different when they brought carnival celebrations to the West Indies. Enslaved Africans were originally forbidden from participating in the seasonal festivities, but this didn't stop Africans from having carnival celebrations in secret, subverting the European celebration and syncretizing it with celebrations, rituals, and practices from the various African regions they'd hailed from. Different islands syncretized different traditions into their celebration of carnival, but all carnival celebrations throughout the Caribbean tend to have emerged from the celebration in Trinidad. That was kind of where the original carnival celebration really kicked off. In Trinidad and Barbados, carnival became linked and intertwined with harvest festivals amongst the enslaved population. Amongst different islands, this appeared to be roughly the case throughout. Not in every situation, however. To this day, Barbados's carnival celebration is called Cropover, as a result, celebrating the end of the harvest season. In Trinidad, the harvest festival was called Kabule, which means burnt cane, and probably referred to parts of the sugarcane manufacturing process where sugarcane, the cash crop enslaved Caribbean people worked to grow, was transformed to molasses or rum. The Kabule riots in Trinidad represented the British government's attempt to crack down on traditional African celebrations that the Black Trinidadians had incorporated into the carnival season. The British, however, were unable to stem this burgeoning aspect of Trinidadian culture, and so carnival took on this not less of a subversive attitude, but along with the subversive history, it became an act of resistance. And while the British were unable to stem carnival celebrations, they did leave some of their stigmatization of specifically Black carnival celebrations with lasting roots in Caribbean culture. Like most ethnic groups, West Indian people are not monolithic in their opinion. While many celebrate and participate in carnival, there is also a conservative opinion with a somewhat religious basis opposed to the irreligiosity of carnival celebrations in practice. The British originally formed much of that cultural opinion of that conservatism from the beginning of carnival's popularity amongst the enslaved and formerly enslaved as a method of preserving a cultural identity that had nearly been wiped out through generations of slavery. The British weren't eager to let this rest, however, and they did attempt to crack down. However, in the long term, they were unsuccessful. You may then wonder about our second question. When did carnival become culturally distinct? It's difficult to believe that the carnival celebrations we knew had anything to do with Europeans at all. Soca music, costumes, stilt walkers, the general environment of carnival celebration feels distinctly non-European. And if you have ever been to a down-home carnival, you know what I'm talking about. In England, where the British media often fear-mongers about the quote dangers at Notting Hill Carnival celebrations, you get the distinct impression that there is a vein of loathing toward carnival that belies how, quote, foreign Europeans find the entire affair and is totally historically in line with their original attitude towards carnival as a method of resistance and subversiveness against the British ruling class. Caribbean carnival celebrations were very nearly culturally distinct from their inception. Due to exclusion from the European celebrations, African celebrations of carnival always had that distinctly non-European flavor. Obviously, under slavery, you could not go out and buy the fancy silk dresses. The only reason these people could afford these things was because they trafficked human beings. So naturally, when the Africans participated, they didn't have those resources. In the years after emancipation, the cultural identity of Carnival became solidified as the Africans incorporated and really established rituals from the continent, as in Africa. And they could only, however, preserve what rituals that survived the painful excisement from their homeland. When Caribbean people painted themselves in black tar, organized mass camps, participated in stick fighting, and wore masks created in the same style as they had made on the African continent, Carnival began its path to its cultural distinctiveness. And there was always an element of mockery of the European celebration within the African Carnival celebrations. If the white people would exclude the black people from celebrating, the black people would resist by taking their own celebration and making it 10 times better. And quite honestly, mission accomplished. To this day, revelers and soca artists maintain this mockery of the quote stoosh and quote upper class. Hoity-toity people, at first white, but then of all shades, let's be real, became the subject of skits, jokes, and songs, a carnival tradition emphasizing the cultural distinctiveness from the European celebration and a cultural distinctiveness that remains to this day. Carnival always subverted what was white, wealthy, and proper about society. No matter your feelings about modernization, you have to at least admit that these features of carnival celebration survive even the most commercialized of carnival experiences. Carnival continue to evolve. In our increasingly connected world, many different factors influence our modern celebration, and it's almost difficult to pin down what has had the greatest influence. The commercial aspect of Carnival, where people can theoretically profit off of organizing the bands and selling the costumes, allows these celebrations to become bigger and more glamorous every year. More money equals more drinks, better costumes, better trucks. In theory, bigger celebrations, longer parties, you get the point. Emigration and immigration transport Carnival to other parts of the world. You now have Trinidadians, Jamaicans, Vincentians, Montserratians, Dominicans, all mixing together and bringing their own flavor to a celebration that may take place outside of the Caribbean, like Notting Hill or Miami. This too leads to difference and evolution. And of course, with this increased connectedness, we can hear new music and learn new dance moves faster than ever before. And with all this new, you may be wondering, well, what happens to the tradition? What happens to the history? And we'll definitely talk about that. Carnival may be more commercial, but it also has come close to achieving a nearly utopian vision of a connected Caribbean, at least on this issue. Carnival isn't about fighting, arguing, or political debate necessarily, but it has always been about political expression. What politics expressed and the deeper significance may be better analyzed with greater distance from our modern period. Hindsight, after all, is 2020. But as Carnival becomes more expensive, with some costumes costing as much as $1,400 US in a country with such a small, population as St. Lucia, where I'm from, you have to wonder if the celebration more closely mimics the European celebration based on the exclusion of the underclasses. However, within the West Indies, this would not be completely race-based exclusion, but socioeconomic. This is an interesting theory, and not one I'm sure I agree with, even if I presented it to you here. While there is an element of exclusiveness and exclusion, by definition, to quote, pretty mass celebrations, and I will get into what that is in a second, there will always be people who keep and remember the quote, old mass ways. And if these two phrases mean nothing to you, keep listening, because I will talk more about the twists and turns of Carnival's evolution and what this means for Caribbean culture in 2021. What I can say for sure is that Carnival has always been an evolution. There has always been change, novelty, and difference alongside the traditions, and how Carnival evolves into the future is up to the Caribbean youth who keep, maintain, participate in, and commercialize our culture. We have answered the important questions, But that still leaves a lot of history for us to chew through in this episode. Little history gerbils nomming our way to the point, but we're going to get through it. Here are the aspects of Carnival we're going to learn more about. There is way more than this that I could have included, but these are some of the most important features of Caribbean Carnival celebrations, as well as some of my personal favorites. Because Carnival in the Caribbean originated in Trinidad, we'll focus on the historical origins within Trinidad and touch on the later islands when it becomes relevant to the point that I'm trying to make. Today, we will talk about the history of Carnival costumes and the competition, Mass Camp, Juve, Parade Day, Old Mass versus Pretty Mass, Calypso, Soca, and Steel Pan. Once we've covered these important features of Carnival, I will contextualize the event, the annual event on St. Lucia in the diaspora, and discuss the effects, both positive and negative, of the increased commercialization of the celebration that draws millions of tourists throughout the Caribbean annually and brings plenty of tourists to other parts of the world with highly concentrated West Indian populations. Carnival Parade Day involves a lot of preparation, which occurs at a place called the Mass Camp. Mass here refers to the costumes and the sort of actions going with the costumes and is a shortened form of the word masquerade. So you can think of a mass camp as the masquerade camp, where keepers of the culture prepare the costumes and get ready for the band on parade day. This would also be where you learn the traditions and how to play some of the characters who we will discuss in the costume section. Mass camps, for what's referred to as quote old mass, are different from, quote, pretty mass camps, which maybe more of us, like myself, would be more familiar with. But we will discuss the differences between these two phrases shortly. Mass camps are essentially a place where revelers gather and prepared for, quote, playing mass, which refers to playing masquerade on Carnival's parade day. The word juve means daybreak, and this is an evening to daybreak, to dawn, party prior to parade day. Juve marks the beginning of Carnival. So let's say Carnival is Tuesday morning. Juve would start maybe Monday evening and carry through to Tuesday morning. And Juve technically marks the beginning of Carnival. In some countries, Juve actually happens on the day before Emancipation Day. And Juve originated with emancipation in 1838, which is probably why this kind of differs by country, whether or not it's included in Carnival celebrations or it's more of an Emancipation Day feature. As I understand it, my colloquial understanding of Juve, aside from research, is that Juve is any daybreak party and Juves can occur for various reasons, but more traditionally in St. Lucia, it's a Carnival thing. While Carnival had its origins in Trinidad, other countries celebrate Carnival on different dates that moved around for different reasons, so some aspects of the celebration may differ. So, for example, in some countries, it was moved around for tourism reasons, and other countries moved it around for different reasons. In St. Lucia, Carnival is often in July. In Barbados, it's often, I believe, towards the end of August. But in Trinidad, it is when Carnival traditionally was, which is before Ash Wednesday. During Juve, certain, quote, characters associated with Carnival appear, the first masqueraders, dressing up as Carnival characters like Jab Molasi and Dame Lorraine, who I will also get into in a few more minutes. Juve is also referred to as Dirty Mass, where people often wear costumes and act out characters based on current political events. In some celebrations, a king and queen of Juve are chosen based on the wit of their costume and or their political message. Juve leads right into Parade Day, or Mass. Revelers dress in costumes and parade down the streets of Port of Spain or in St. Lucia Castries, in Barbados Bridgetown, in different islands, wherever they have it. I'm not going to list every single island. I know to some this may be offensive, but I don't mean to be offensive. People parade down the streets of Port of Spain or wheresoever to the sound of calypso music and steel drums. More recently, Carnival tends to have DJs and artists of other genres like soca, not just Steel Pan and Calypso, but originally, Calypso and Steel Pan music were essential parts of a good carnival celebration, and in the music section, we'll talk about the history of these different types of music as well. In parade days that I have experienced, live artists and performers have also been a part of a good carnival celebration, and the DJ doesn't just play music, but tends to also act as a hype man in a way and brings a lot of energy to the celebration in general. Old Mass and Pretty Mass are a way of distinguishing the difference in carnival masquerade celebrations of the more commercial era
compared to traditional celebrations.
Carnival has gone global, and over time, many feel that the old way of doing things may be lost forever. To distinguish between the different eras, Old Mass refers to the traditional masquerade costumes and performance, whereas Pretty Mass celebrates the lavish, skimpy, yet oddly alluring costumes of the present day. In some countries, these celebrations are held on different days. In other countries, the celebrations are intertwined, with some acting as keepers of the culture and fighting strong against commercialization. Costumes are the most exciting features of carnival, and there are many different costumes we'll talk about today. For Old Mass, there are a variety of traditional characters or character archetypes that you can dress up as. These traditional costumes are a method of preserving a culture's legends and stories through the ritual of carnival celebration. I want to go through a few of the characters, but these are not all the characters you could expect to see. Please see my source notes for more information. Different countries may have specific characters that are unique to that country, but they're portrayed in a similar manner to this. So you'll still be able to get an understanding of what I mean. And also, I have seen some people create costumes in the Old Mass style, where they create a costume that makes a political statement. Costumes like that, for example, may be something like representing a certain politician as a stooge of the Chinese government. That type of thing is what I mean when I'm talking about the political costumes. But we are going to get into the culturally more traditional costumes. And one of the characters you could dress up as was called Baby Doll. This went out of vogue around the 1930s, unclear why, but the masquerade portrayed exactly what it sounds like. A baby doll, so the person would dress up in a baby as like a baby doll with a frilly dress and bonnet. This person would carry a literal baby doll as well, which symbolized an illegitimate child. A part of embodying this character would involve stopping men passing by and accusing them of being the child's father. I'm going to pause and go slightly off topic and say that these characters are not necessarily restricted to gender. Carnival is one of those times in the West Indies where you will see a lot of men dressed up as these female carnival portrayals as a joke, sort of, portraying the character. I don't really know what it is, but carnival, or I am not the authority on what is going on through their minds. However, I do want to point out that a lot of these costumes don't have a specific gender as to who can play them. It depends on your portrayal, what you bring to the character. Bats were another character you could portray, and I'm already loving that. Bat costumes had masks and a headpiece, as well as a skin-tight brown or black bodysuit component, but not very sexy looking, sorry to say. No shade to the bats. There was a specific bat dance and movements choreographed to imitate a bat's movements that masqueraders would practice and portray during the festivities. This may be something that would happen at an Old Mass camp. Another lurid character was called Bookman, and this was a feature of Devil Mass portrayal. So if a band would choose to portray devils as their theme. Bookman was given this name because the character carries around a giant book where he writes the names of those he had secured for hell. Bookman is the king of devils, and he moves in a waltzing manner with constant bowing and musical accompaniment that sounds very kind of fancy and old world. This character wore Tudor-style clothing and fancy dress in general, made out of luxurious materials like velvet and satin, as well as a pleated or fluted bodice. Bookman wore on his head an oversized mask with a demonic expression. Sometimes this would be kind of like a malicious smile, like, hey, I've got your soul now. And I just want to clearly state that in the source image I am looking at as I put this together, the devil is a white man, and the mask is supposed to represent the devil's face, the oversized mask on the head. One of the cutest and funniest costumes was the burroquite costume. This word came from a Spanish word meaning little donkey, and the costume basically is a construction that gives the illusion of a dancer riding a small donkey, and it's made out of a wooden bamboo frame. Apparently, this tradition was both a part of East Indian Hindu culture and something that had come from the South American mainland, but I don't have any further information about what that means. However, the dance performed by the burroquites originated in Venezuela. Now, this one I have never seen, burroquites in St. Lucia, but I bet this is something more popular in Trinidad because of that Venezuelan influence. Clowns were honestly another classic old mask costume. Terrifying and hilarious at once, this is also a relatively easy, fun, family-friendly costume if you're not into the devil stuff. The clown's masquerade would be carrying out foolish antics to entertain. You're a clown. They dressed exactly how you would imagine. I don't mean you literally are a clown, but, you know, they behaved like clowns. They would dress exactly as you imagine in clown costumes, with the wigs and the red noses, as well as white powder and makeup on their faces. Dame Lorraine, sometimes called Dame Lorraine, was a voluptuous female character with a big butt and bigger boobies, so to speak. This was originally a mockery of the same character played by the descendants of white slave owners. Male and female masqueraders alike take on this performance where they mocked the slave-owning plantocracy by parodying the French aristocratic dances Dame Lorraine originally entailed. Also, the costumes look hilarious because of the giant butt and giant boobs, which we tend to find funny. In West Indian culture, a lot of West Indian men have dressed up for a school play. Dame Lorraine dancers perform to songs played by cuatro and bandolier groups. And in general, you can sort of imagine this character would be mocking the upper class, oh my god, pass the smelling salts, way of life. I highly recommend looking up these costumes because they're a little difficult to describe and carry the same hilarious effect. The dragon costume is another character associated with devil masks. This one is a pretty straightforward costume to understand, but with a lot of potential effort going into the construction of the costume, depending on your proclivities towards design and building. This costume had a large dragon head with a movable tongue, and I have seen magnificent carnival constructions, so I can imagine that this would be quite the creation. Chains would hang from the costume, held onto by imps who played the role of restraining the dragon. The dragon dance aimed to both captivate and frighten an audience. Dragons, however, cannot cross water. That's part of the traditional way you play the character. So whenever during the parade, the dragon would come across water on the street, the imps would have to taunt him and put on a display of convincing or forcing the dragon to cross water so they could continue the parade. And if the dragon has to stop for too much water, you know the road has a lot of potholes. Fancy Indians are some of the more spectacular, and in this modern age, controversial forms of masquerade. Occasionally, the performance gets likened to cultural appropriation of Native American costumes, but it's not quite that way in the old mass performance. I think some of y'all pretty mass people are skirting by, but that's neither here nor there. These are elaborate costumes based on the native peoples of North America, and participation in the old mass way involved learning the language or languages they spoke in a call and response pattern. So you may not learn the entire language, but you would be keeping a linguistic element alive in your performance. There is some speculation that this fancy Indian was an adaptation from the Black Indians in New Orleans Mardi Gras and eventually adapted as a part of Old Mass. As you know, the Louisiana area was also colonized by the French, and for a long time there was a lot of connection and movement between these areas. So culture and changes happened based on different Caribbean people interacting with each other. There are other types of traditional Indian costumes. The wild Indians are groups that are generally disappearing. There are red Indians, the Warahoons, and the blue Indians who are linked to the indigenous people of Venezuela. Then there are black Indians or African Indians, and I think this is kind of the race-mixed groups of Indians. Now we are on to more devils. Jab-Jab referred to a pretty devil who dressed in a costume resembling a medieval court jester, so kind of more colorful. On his head, a hood stuffed with cloth horns formed the headpiece. The Jab-Jab carried a whip of braided hemp that swung about and cracked menacingly. These whips have been known to rip other participants' costumes to shreds. I am unclear why you would want to do this, I guess for the excitement and the entertainment. So, you know what, carry on, but this is what the Jab-Jab costume is. Jab Malassi is another devil mask character and my favorite character in the old mask pantheon. Malassi, as you might imagine, is molasses. This costume involves the masqueraders smearing themselves with grease, mud, red, green, or blue paint. The costume is a pair of shorts or pants cut off at the knee, a wire tail, mask horns, and pitchfork. This is one of the wilder dancing devils, where to let the Jab Malassi overwhelm you is basically you will be doing a lot of whining and dancing along to a pretty aggressive beat played on tins or pans by the imps that surround the character. Some imps supply the music, others hold the chains, restraining the Jab Malassi as he pulls against them with his wild dancing. In Grenada, Jab-Jab and Jab Malassi are very big and very big parts of their carnival celebration. And in St. Lucia, it's a big part of the Juve celebration, but I have not seen it so much on parade day in St. Lucia. However, the Grenadians have taken Jab-Jab and they have done something else with it, so credit where it's due. Midnight Robber is considered by many one of the most beloved old mask characters. I think it's because of the complexity of acting and storytelling that this character really entails. A lot of people like the Midnight Robber. He has an identifiable costume and distinctive speech referred to as robber talk, derived from the tradition of the African griot slash storyteller. Midnight Robbers would speak in a boastful and mocking style about his antics as a bandit or a villain. He would come up with a life story for himself that was larger than life, portraying him as the greatest criminal mastermind of all time, bragging about who he scammed, who he killed, all of these types of things in a way that was both terrifying and alluring, and oftentimes peppered with phrases that people would know really well. West Indians really like proverbs and different phrases and Bible verses, and Midnight Robber would include all of these in his portrayal of the character. His costume would be a broad-brimmed white hat with a fringe, a black and white satin shirt with a matching trousers, a cape, and a whistle, as well as a weapon. Now, at some point, the Midnight Robber character started to incorporate some aspects of Westerns, as Westerns became a very popular form of media around the globe, and West Indians interacted more with Americans from the army bases as the Americans kind of did what they do in the West Indies. And so the Midnight Robber took on an aspect of acting out similar to characters from villains from Westerns, because West Indians, I don't know if you know, but we're really into Western type stuff. So that's something to take note of as well. Now, this costume was tough to get through. There were minstrels. Yes, people, there were minstrels. I pray to God that there is not minstrelry in the streets of Trinidad in 2021. I've never seen this in St. Lucia, mind you, but how could I read this and not tell the world? I am shameless. And I am speechless. The minstrel characters were based on American minstrel shows popular in the early 1900s. They would have a dance routine and wear a face painted white or black and a costume with a scissors tailcoat, striped trousers, tall straw hat, and gloves. I'm getting a little bit of secondhand embarrassment, but I will wait to hear the full story, which I did not get from my research site. However, I feel like this is probably out of vogue. The minstrels would accompany their singing on the guitar as well as rattling bones played between their hands. Okay. Along with Jab Molasi, Moko Jembis are my other favorite old mass portrayal. This costume requires stilt walker skills, which I personally find very impressive. The name of Moko Jembi is likely a compound name from two differing cultures that would have interacted in the West Indies. Moko is likely from the Hausa word for ugly, whereas Jembi derived from Congo sources for spirit. The character represents the Orisha, or deity, if you want to be more neutral, of fate and retribution. This character symbolizes that despite enduring centuries of brutal treatment, he still remains tall, hence the stilts. Traditional Moko Jembis would cover their stilts, so they appeared to just be extremely tall, and those costumes are some of the most beautiful to behold. This height allowed the Moko Jembis to see the future before it happened, and also was symbolically to protect the village from harm. This costume obviously takes a lot of skill and practice to master, and stilt walking in that manner is a well-protected West Indian tradition. Pierrot Grenade was a finely dressed masquerader known for his fighting prowess with a whip or other weapons. He was followed by a band of female supporters who would fight on his behalf against other Pierrot groups during the masquerade. So if you saw another man dressed as Pierrot, you would unleash your harem onto his harem. King of polyamory, make them fight. Anyway, Pierrot Grenade wore a gown made out of burlap with strips of colored cloth, small tins containing pebbles, and small boxes that rattled attached to it. He might wear a hat or a colored head tie on his head, but he would also cover his face with a mask for anonymity. This was because part of this character was making barbs and jibes about respected members of the community, like a boss. Apparently, this character was based off of a man from the neighboring Grenada who was so legendary that he had been driven from the streets after numerous arrests for fighting, and honestly, he sounded like a mix between a thug and a baddie, so we're not really sure what to make of Pierrot Grenade, but the costume sounds pretty fun to me. Sailor Mass and its variations came to Carnival in the 1880s, when British, French, and U.S. Navy arrived in Trinidad. This is one of the most popular costumes, apparently, because it was lightweight and inexpensive to make. There were free French sailors, fancy sailors, and king sailors, each with a different costume and each with a different form of dancing. Some of the dances that went with the sailor mass portrayal were the skipjack, camel walk, rock de boat, and crab. These are all the old mass characters I will cover today. I've seen other characters and portrayals that don't include these characters, but these are the traditional ones that you need to know. There's a lot of room for creativity and differing portrayals within old mass. Every person would bring their unique take to the character, and much of that creativity would vary on the customs, stories, and traditions of a particular island and people. But what about pretty mass? What is there to say about the new trend of thong bikinis and $400 feather headdresses? I don't have anything negative to say about pretty mass costumes specifically. I participate in carnival whenever I can, and I rip my flesh-colored fishnet tights into shreds 1 mile at a time like everyone else. Pretty mass costumes still portray different themes, heralding the tradition of old mass. But some believe that these portrayals are, quote, missing the point. They believe at one point you could look at a band and tell exactly what they portrayed. If you see a bunch of girls in a blue bikini, they could be portraying water or whales. It's hard to know. Carnival wasn't always just about dressing up and looking sexy and pushing fabric between your butt cheeks to make it look like a thong. Masquerading was about embodying the theme, dressing up and playing a character, as well as teaching the traditional portrayal of the character to others or absorbing it through observation. You could see a guy play Midnight Robber and come up with your way to do it and do it without a formal lesson, I suppose. I certainly understand those criticisms of pretty mass and empathize with them 100%, especially from our generation of elders that feels like so much of our culture has been lost with an increasingly connected world. These people work really hard to maintain the old elements of mass, and a lot of times, despite their elder way of expressing things, they truly mean well and want our culture to survive. I agree with them to that extent, and believe that alongside them that traditions exist for a reason, and that is why I wanted to make this podcast, celebrating and discussing some of the traditions. I will enjoy everything about Carnival as for as long as I have feet to stand, and honestly, I have asked my family to wheel me if I am ever on my deathbed or otherwise wheelchair-bound during Mass. As a West Indian, I believe it is up to us to preserve our culture. If we want to see more elements of old Mass, we have the power to bring it back, even if that has to evolve with our more globally connected times. And if you are listening to this as someone who is not of Caribbean descent, which most of you probably are not, participating, educating yourself, and supporting the cultural expression is something I highly recommend. Unlike the Europeans who started Carnival, we have never had a history of race-based exclusion from the event in my experience in the West Indies. And this is certainly not the case now when our island mates are making a killing on thong bikini costumes being sold for a massive profit. Naturally, every West Indian person may not agree with me, but I always enjoy showing people this spectacular aspect of our culture. One last word to the wise, though. If you do ever participate in Carnival in the West Indies, bring sunscreen. One of the most important features of Carnival we have yet to discuss is the music. Masquerading through the streets, dancing and singing are nothing without Caribbean music. Certainly, the musical tastes of the times have changed. I can't imagine my great-grandmother dancing to Split in the Middle, and I don't think she would want me to try. However, don't allow my millennial bias to get in the way of the truth. Calypso, when it first emerged, would have been every bit as controversial as Split in the Middle might be today. In 1881, Britain banned percussion in the Caribbean, drums, which was a part of a British campaign to eliminate African culture further by destroying their ability to drum, which is a way that they preserve the culture as well as oral history. Calypso also contained social commentary, disguised in a subtle way at first, to avoid charges of sedition, which may have been punishable by death in many islands, as I discussed in my episode on Rastafarianism. Despite his album's title, I do have to let my American friends know that Calypso's roots have nothing to do with Harry Belafonte. For Americans who may be confused, Calypso is rooted in a West African tradition brought to the Caribbean, and it sounds very different from reggae and dancehall. Caissos, where the word comes from, were performed by a griot who offered, a griot who offered social commentary through praise, satire, or lament. The lyrics often mocked slave masters, or those who had a lot of power in society, depending on the time period, and were performed in a call-and-response setting. Everything about Calypso was considered improper by high and respectable society. But this was another way Carnival was politicized from its inception, allowing the working class people, and specifically Black people, to express grievances in a public manner in a way that would not harm them in the future. Soca is short for Soul of Calypso, and it's a modern derivative of Calypso music. It was invented to be a hybrid of calypso and Indian music, allegedly by Lord Shorty, who saw the vision for how Caribbean art forms could intertwine and evolve. This was a genre of music that burgeoned in the aftermath of independence movements, and soca embodies that shift to the modern era in every sense of the word since it originally came about during the 70s. Just like steel pan and calypso, it's made its way into different carnival celebrations around the world and has evolved in nuanced ways in different countries. As carnival celebrations spread throughout the Caribbean and eventually to England, Toronto, Miami, etc., each carnival celebration took on its own distinct flavor. Evolution of carnival celebrations may have converged at one point, but there was enough of a divergence for different countries to have carnival celebrations with very different feels and very different experiences. Grenadian music and carnival celebrations place particular importance on the Jab Molasi character, for example. St. Lucia's carnival route is known as an endurance event, and St. Lucians take pride in the stamina required to participate in the 6-mile-long route and 3 days of partying. These differences don't mean we can't converge, not at all. In recent times, our connectedness as a region has brought carnival around the world. Contrary to the opinion of some, it didn't take a single person of European descent to make Caribbean carnival go global. This was natural due to the patterns of emigration and immigration amongst our people. Many of the Black Caribbean people in England and North America maintained close familial ties to the West Indies, allowing the exchange of cultural information not just amongst islands but throughout a greater diaspora, with profound links to a unique ethnic experience. Not just the suffering of the generational injury of the transatlantic slave trade, but the unique evolution of Caribbean history that followed from the Cabule riots to cane fields to resistance against the plantocracy to our eventual independence and emigration around the globe. Carnival is ultimately about storytelling, and in debating pretty mass versus old mass, I think that's how we may find our way back. How can we tell stories with our costumes that subvert, challenge, and push back politically with what we're wearing, the stories we tell, the songs we write, and the ways we move? How can we rejoin the spiritual catharsis of carnival with a pragmatic encoding of our oral history and tradition? Perhaps we are already doing this by accepting change, by preserving our culture through commercialization instead of letting it die. This is a difficult question to answer or ponder on generally, and it isn't one that I feel I must. But it is something to think about if you are interested in thinking about this sort of thing. We are nearly at the end of this episode. I hope you learned a lot about carnival celebrations throughout the Caribbean. I enjoyed putting this episode together and revisiting some of the interesting aspects of Caribbean history. There are so many people who could probably get into way more detail than I did, but I hope to give you a picture of how carnival originated and how/why it's celebrated around the world. That's it for this week. If you'd like the other episodes on Caribbean history so far, check out my episodes on Rastafarianism or Afro-Cuban Santeria. Both are interesting, detailed, and I think if you liked this one, you'll enjoy these. You can find me on Twitter and Patreon as well as via email. I've put my links in the podcast description because why the heck not? I recommend reading through the links in this particular episode in your free time or in the middle of a really bad argument you're having just to switch things up. I will see you next week with another podcast if things go my way. Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast, follow whatever it is you gotta do. I will see you next time.